Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. I'm going to be guiding you about some very interesting parts of the war for the free world today, starting in segment two with John Bolton, former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, on his take on the Obama Doctrine and legacy in the foreign policy and national security arenas, its implications, among other things, for our domestic politics. Segment three, we'll be talking with Louis Gohmert about some politics and security as well, most notably regarding immigration issues. And I'll be testing with him an interesting hypothesis that's being rooted about. I'm going to talk about that in a moment. And in segment four, Jim Hansen will be our boots-on-the-ground guide describing the latest turn of the screws with respect to the cuts of our national security and the implications for the seeming hemorrhage of surface-to-air missiles into the hands of some very dubious customers, thanks to the overthrow of the Libyan regime. So all of that lies ahead. But first, I wanted to just venture into an area that is not my area of expertise, I'll be the first to admit it, and therefore my interest in and enthusiasm for something a man who knows a lot more about politics than I do, Dick Morris, has written just recently. It can be attributed perhaps to my relative inexperience. But I think Dick Morris is onto something when he speculates that Barack Obama may not be the presidential candidate for the Democratic Party in 2012. That he may, according to Dick Morris, pull out rather than be subjected to the kind of withering criticism and ultimately repudiation that seems in the offing at the moment, and that I think someone with his narcissistic propensities may have a very difficult time accepting. What Dick, who not only is quite canny when it comes to matters of political affairs, but knows intimately Bill Clinton and his wife Hillary, is keying off of, in part, is not just the meltdown of the Obama presidency and the growing unease of fellow Democrats who particularly would be down ticket from President Obama in a re-election bid, now increasingly saying, at least privately and to some extent even publicly, that they're apprehensive in the extreme about having Obama leading their platform, their ticket for 2012. Bill Clinton seems to be positioning himself not only to encourage such sentiments and to intensify them, but to promote his wife as the obvious successor to Obama, should he pull a, as Dick calls it, Lyndon Johnson. Then President Johnson decided it was going to be impossible for him to get reelected and bailed out back in 1968. Here's the question. As you look at what former President Bill Clinton is doing, and Dick enumerates this in his piece entitled "What is Bill Clinton Up To?" that he co-authored with his wife Eileen McGann on September 27th. The former president is assiduously trashing Barack Obama's jobs plan, even as the president positions himself, as I said, to both promote his own book on the subject, which will be coming out shortly, and it appears ensuring that his wife will be the beneficiary of the weakening of Obama that it appears he's very much engaged in doing. All of which is stunning, to say the least. We're seeing the president making this concerted effort both to garner votes, specifically for his jobs plan, but for his campaign, and, of course, raise immense, perhaps even obscene amounts of money as well. Some say it may be $1 billion. And I'm going to explore with the ranking member of one of the key subcommittees in the House Judiciary Committee momentarily, Congressman Louis Gohmert, what the implications of withdrawal from the presidential campaign by President Obama might be. But suffice it to say, this is an interesting drama domestically, but what makes it even more interesting and maybe even more complicated is what President Clinton has been doing lately with respect to Israel. And you may or may not have followed this, but last week he launched a really blistering attack against the Israelis, and specifically against their prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. It was an exercise in not only criticizing and blaming Israel for there not being a peace agreement, playing up the meme that really it's entirely Israel's fault, and if only it had acceded to what the Saudis and all of the other Arabs had proposed, Israel would be living side by side in peace with a Palestinian state and enjoying normal relations, diplomatic and commercial, with all of its Muslim neighbors, and that basically Benjamin Netanyahu, who, by the way, President Clinton effectively helped overthrow back when he was president, and Benjamin Netanyahu was the prime minister of Israel the first time around. You see a very strident and unmistakably hostile attitude adopted here. Now, what does that mean if Dick Morris is right and Hillary Clinton is to be viewed increasingly in the days ahead as the successor for Barack Obama? And this is a big if, I grant you, but let's just say for the purpose of discussion, that's what's going on here. We should all recall Hillary Clinton was notorious during her time as First Lady for her enthusiasm for the Palestinians. It was captured at one moment by her affectionate embrace of Mrs. Arafat, Yasser Arafat's wife. And she has gone on in subsequent incarnations as a senator and now as the Secretary of State to make statements that, at least some of which, are again, pretty scathing towards the Israelis. In fact, just in the past day or so, she has talked about counterproductive settlements in a way that seems designed to demonstrate, again, her affinity for the Palestinian position and, well, quite candidly, some hostility towards Israel. We also have her at this moment trying to work up some kind of compromise between the Muslim majority nations Organization of the Islamic Conference insist on criminalizing any kind of offensive expression against Islam or Muslims. She's trying to bridge that with the First Amendment of the United States, which says you can express, you know, criticism, offensive or otherwise, of anybody. This comes as we also discover that Hillary Clinton's deputy chief of staff is a woman with deep ties to the Muslim Brotherhood in her family. All of which is to say, this is presumably going to be a problem for Hillary Clinton, should she become a candidate for the presidency again, at a time when in New York 9, the 9th District of New York, Jews already showed that they were prepared to repudiate a president or candidate who was unmistakably hostile to the Jewish state and, I think, to our interests in its future success and survival. So all of this bears watching, folks. And as I say, we'll be talking about it with a shrewd congressional observer and politician, But mark my words, if this continues to go badly, economically and politically, for the President of the United States, I think we're going to wind up talking a lot more about Hillary Clinton and about her positions, among other things, whether she's any more sound, any more responsible, and any more likely to have America's fundamental interests at heart when it comes to the importance of those friends in Israel and their survival. We'll be watching this space. I hope you will be too. Stay with us. More coming with Ambassador John Bolton. Straight ahead.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the cravings for sweets. I totally lost the cravings for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
This could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined, I'm very pleased to say, by the Honorable John Bolton, former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, man who held a host of other senior positions in the United States government, is now a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and the author of a best-selling book, Surrender is Not an Option. And more to the point, he's not simply an author of a book by that title. He's a practitioner of the principle of surrender not being an option. And Mr. Ambassador, it's always great to have you with us. Thank you for coming back and joining us at Secure Freedom.
Glad to do it. Glad to be with you.
A lot to talk about, and I'm sure we won't do justice to any of it, but let's quickly move through a couple of hot spots. The outgoing chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen, last week sort of rocked Pakistan and perhaps our relationship with them by speaking the truth about the nature of the relationship between Pakistani institutions, notably the intelligence services, and some of the most dangerous of the terrorists killing Americans in Afghanistan, including the Haqqani network. What does this tell us about the status of U.S.-Pakistani relations, and where do you think they're likely to go from here?
Well, I think it was very important for Admiral Mullen to make this point publicly. What was striking about it to me, though, was how little new news there was, in the sense those who follow the Pakistani Inner Services Intelligence Division, its support for the Taliban and other radicals over the years, I think would be surprised only by the specificity of what Mullen said. And it's pretty damning specificity that they were party, basically, to the Haqqani network attack on the U.S. Embassy and NATO headquarters in Kabul, Afghanistan. And that is a very, very direct charge. But in fact, there's simply no question that ISI was behind some of the most radical of the Mujahideen in the anti-Soviet days, such as Gulbuddin Hekmati, who is back on the scene again.
Still with us.
The Taliban was nurtured by ISI, that the terrorist groups that they set up to attack the Indians in Kashmir have shifted their activity into Afghanistan, into Pakistan itself. You know, I had a colleague once.
To say nothing
who,
of Al-Qaeda. I mean,
exactly.
Let's not leave them out.
On the border. Well, you know, Osama bin Laden was not just vacationing near Islamabad. I think he was almost certainly protected by ISI. But a colleague at State who once said, you know, the Pakistani government is composed of both arsonists and firefighters. And interestingly, sometimes they're in the same person. And that's the difficulty of dealing with that government. And it's the most difficult thing is that it has control of a substantial arsenal of nuclear weapons.
Right. You can light a lot of fires with a nuclear arsenal like theirs.
Exactly.
Mr. Ambassador, you spent a lot of time at and been rather critical of, I think entirely properly, the institution known as the United Nations here in the United States. A lot of the annual histrionics and posturing and speech making and traffic jams associated with its General Assembly meeting took place in the past week or so. One of the featured events there was, of course, the speech of the President of the United States, President Obama, making a rather extraordinary, for him it seemed, paean to Israel. What did you make of this? What did it do for the U.S. in the cut and thrust over unilateral declaration of a Palestinian state and its recognition by the U.N.? And again, where do you think this leaves us?
Well, I think the speech was crafted having very much in mind we're 13 months away from our election in November of next year, and the president's in real trouble with the pro-Israel vote. You know, speeches are part of foreign policy. They're an articulation of policy, as they are of domestic policy, but they are not policy itself. The policy is what the government actually does. And I think this is just a rhetorical overlay to a policy that for 2.5 years has been very, very adverse to Israel, and I might say adverse to American interests as well. And I think the mishandling of this whole Palestinian statehood question by the Obama administration is a good example of that. He could have stopped this dead in its tracks up to a year ago. He, in fact, is part of the reason the Palestinians have persisted with it. And it's going to end up in a lose-lose-lose situation for everybody. Nobody will, well, however this ends up, and I don't think it will end up with Palestine, quote-unquote, being a member state of the UN, it's going to leave everybody with egg on their face, which is about par for the course with Obama administration policy.
Well, the bigger question, and again, we're speaking with the former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton. Currently, in addition to his day job at the American Enterprise Institute, he is a Fox News contributor and analyst. You've seen him there regularly, I'm delighted to say. Sadly, not a presidential candidate in his own right. There had been some talk about that, but you've decided otherwise. But you certainly have been watching closely, John Bolton, what the repercussions of the mishaps that the administration has either been responsible for or otherwise aided and abetted in the Middle East are. I'd like to just sort of get your quick take, if I could, on how this is all playing out, not just for our friends in Israel, but for our interests there, not least against the backdrop of one particularly unhappy development, which is that reportedly there are now some 20,000 surface-to-air missiles that have gone missing, as they say, from the former caches and arsenal of Muammar Gaddafi.
Well, that is a stunning report, and if it's anything close to being true, even if it's 25% true, we have moved into a much more dangerous world. It's just inexplicable to me how we could have let this happen. I don't have faith that the rebels, such as they are, could have secured those missiles on their own, but surely NATO could have done something, and apparently we haven't. I mean, we'll have to see what the real facts are. But, you know, this is just typical.
Can I just interrupt you on this, because my concern as much as anything is that the rebels have them, since we know
some of the rebels may
are Al-Qaeda and, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood and so on.
Or they're being shipped to rebel bases inside Pakistan
or in Yemen. We've had a takedown of an Iranian plane today. Who knows how? Go ahead. Sorry.
In Somalia and other places, but this is so typical of Obama. He glances into and out of national security policy. He gives a speech, graces us with his presence, and then moves on to try and restructure our domestic economic system in the European social democratic model. And it's this lack of attention, lack of follow-through, lack of concern about consequences of his actions that is as damaging as anything he does consciously. And I think in the Middle East itself, we are far worse off. America's strategic position, Israel's strategic position, the position of some of our Arab friends in the region, much worse off after 2.5 years of Obama policy than we were at the beginning, and no sign that the administration has a clue what to do about it.
Yeah. A frightening prospect. Speaking of European socialism, there are reports that the received wisdom in European capitals these days, notably Brussels, headquarters of the European Union, is that the right answer to the Greek financial meltdown is more European socialism, or even transnational European socialism, including transnational taxes and the like. What's your sense of where this is likely to leave Europe if this kind of prescription is actually applied to a very sick patient?
Well, it's going to leave it in worse shape. You know, the answer in Europe whenever something goes wrong is give more power to Brussels, reduce the power of the nation state. And, you know, one day people will wake up, as some already have, and say, you know, nobody in Brussels is actually elected by real people. That's why they talk
about to them. Right.
Exactly. That's why Margaret Thatcher talked about the democratic deficit in Europe. And to have the United States in the form of Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner pushing that as an answer, to me, is just mind-boggling. I mean, the European Union is an experiment they've been engaged in. The euro in particular is an experiment that's as much political as economic, to be an alternative to the U.S. dollar. Explain to me again why it's in our interest to prop up our competition that way. I think if the Europeans have a problem, they've created themselves, and they can solve it themselves.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say that it's unfortunately been kind of a bipartisan miasma about Europe with, I think, the administration in which you served, among those who thought, yeah, let's get more power, more centralization, more a European army.
Sadly, you're right.
And so on.
Yep,
so,
sadly, you're right.
We're in this with both feet. Ambassador John Bolton, as always, your sense of where things are and where they're likely to head is indispensable to us here at Secure Freedom Radio, and I think to our country more generally. Thank you for your continuing service to the country. We hope you'll keep it up, and not least that you'll keep coming back to Secure Freedom Radio.
Next, absolutely.
We'll be talking with Congressman Louis Gohmert about his sense of immigration, security, and what it might mean for our domestic politics, and much, much more.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it. at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fast-balling philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag. It's a pouch. And it's not sand. It's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes. I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back with one of our favorite members of the United States House of Representatives. He is Louis Gohmert. He represents the 1st District of Texas and has done so since 2005. A man who is, well, not afraid to say the unsayable, and I'm going to tempt him to say a few things that may be unsayable, or at least politically deemed to be unsayable, about some subjects that are really near and dear to our heart. And Congressman Gohmert, thank you so much for joining us. You have a responsibility in the House for the Judiciary Subcommittee that deals with Homeland Security matters, terrorism and crime. And I want to ask you a question that sort of touches on several of those. President Obama is much in the news at the moment, pandering to Hispanic voters. And in your own native state of Texas, of course, your governor, Rick Perry, has found himself caught up in some controversy about both the fact that a lot of jobs have been created in Texas on his watch have seemingly migrated into the hands of, in many cases at least, illegal aliens. And, of course, this controversy about his position on in-state tuition for illegal aliens has roiled the waters of the Republican primary race. What is your estimate of the ground truth in your state and more generally about the sort of degree to which we are, in fact,
serving as kind of a magnet for these folks under present circumstances, and what should be done about it?
Well, for one thing, I've heard from people who've been in the legislature who are on both sides of the issue, but they point out that even though it is said that that provision to provide in-state tuition for children of illegal aliens, that actually that was put into a massive budget bill, and so they didn't know that it was in the bill, part of the bill. So many of them, when they voted for it, they were voting for the big overall bill without realizing that was part. So that's one thing. But, you know, Governor Perry's been a friend of mine since we were in A&M together, and he was a great leader at A&M then and has been ever since. But what I'm hearing is people who are deeply offended who do not agree, and such things as, well, look, if the widow of one of our valiant service members, servicemen, or the widower of someone who was killed in the service of our country cannot send their child into Texas to go to Texas A&M or University of Texas and pay in-state tuition, why are we giving a better deal to people who are illegally in the state, you know, than children of deceased service members? I had a man from Florida tell me that he was furious with the response because his son wanted to come to Texas A&M. They couldn't afford it with the out-of-state tuition, and little did he know if they had just been illegally in Texas, his son could have gotten all right they could have afforded and fulfilled his dream of going to Texas A&M. So it's really stirred up a lot of folks who are not happy with that, who do have hearts as big as all outdoors. But I tell you, my heart also goes out to those, you know, you say appealing to the Hispanic vote. I would say appealing to a certain segment of the Hispanic vote. My office helps a lot of people who are Hispanic who are trying to do things the legal way. And it's really kind of a slap at all those Hispanics who are doing everything within their power to bring family members legally and do things the right way. So I'm not, you know, I know the president would love to have everybody illegally here vote for him. And there's certainly a great deal of pandering in that direction. But it ought to also cause anybody great concerns who are part of a party who see their future in power as tied to those who are illegally in the country. And then part of their movement is to make sure that felons can vote because they figure felons would vote. What does it say about your party that you think your hope for the future are voters who are felons and people who are illegally here? Is that really the American dream?
A very fair point. And needless to say, I think the point you've just made is very well taken, that an awful lot of Hispanics that are in this country and have come here legally are as insistent as anybody in this country that others do the same. Let me segue, if I may, to a controversial proposition that has been put forward by my friend Dick Morris, a fairly canny political observer, I'm sure you would agree, Louis Gohmert of Texas.
He
has put out...
You know, I disagree sometimes, but he is a very, very politically thoughtful person, and I enjoy hearing from him.
Well, here's what he's saying at the moment, and that is that he thinks that Barack Obama, despite all of this frenzied campaigning and fundraising, by the way, is actually going to pull out at the insistence of others down ticket from him in the party, who are now panicking that he's going to drive them all off of a cliff with the horrible economy and now the indisputable perception that that he's responsible for it, at least some of it. Let me ask you this. If he were to do that, and this is, of course, all speculative at the moment, what would the implications be? Do you anticipate a Hillary Clinton candidacy? And secondly, if I could ask, as a member of the Judiciary Committee, would it be possible for him to simply convert the hundreds of millions of dollars, some are saying he's going to shoot for $1 billion, that he might raise to his personal use in a post-presidency situation?
Now, I would welcome Dick Morris's input on absolutely anything, any political issue, but as a former judge who spent years sizing people up and having to make judgment about people's intentions and all. I tell you, I just cannot see this president stepping aside. I don't forget that as brilliant as Dick is, he also at one time had said the only person who can prevent Hillary Clinton from being president is Condoleezza Rice, and it didn't quite all work out that way.
That's
and
true.
So, well, I think he had a book to that effect. But anyway, he wouldn't be able to convert all that money to individual use if he didn't run for president. He could use it to, as contribution bait to those who would try to defend what he put in place, like his signature bill of Obamacare. But I know Hillary's saying there's no way that she would step in if he bowed out. Certainly she would. But I just, really, Frank, I just
can't see it. Okay.
With the show this man has, taking credit for things that SEAL teams and others do. I did this, I did that. And then even outing SEAL teams for his own benefit. I had one SEAL team father say that his daughter-in-law, son was in SEAL Team 6. As soon as Biden and Obama outed the SEAL team, they had to start putting guards on their home. I mean, it would put our own military members, our own heroes at risk for a little personal political gain. I just can't see a person like that bowing out gracefully.
Yeah.
And then a guy that says he's going after major oil and then puts forward a bill that would put independent oil producers out of business and make a lot more money. I mean, this is not a man that you can count on to do what you or I would do.
Yeah, you could be absolutely right, and you're certainly a far better politician than I am, and arguably than Dick Morris is, Louis Gohmert. We're I guess just in the mode of speculating about an economic set of circumstances that might prompt an individual who's got the sort of narcissism and self preoccupation of a Barack Obama to say, I'm not going to sully myself by subjecting myself to a repudiation at the polls, and I'm going to spend the next 2 years pushing my radical left, or what's left of 2 years, radical leftist agenda, without fear that it might be difficult for me to simultaneously
Frank,
run.
Yeah, Frank, look at history. I mean, this man who had never done anything before in his life that would justify being the leader of the free world. I mean, a community organizer, excuse me, voting president more often than anybody around, except the thing that allowed him to win was the mainstream media just absolutely defending him
at every turn. Yep.
And I think that he can count on that happening
one more time. With Louis Gohmert, we're going to have to just make book on this for the moment. You are a great political savant, I think, and certainly one of our go-to guys on matters involving national security and homeland security. And we're grateful to you for joining us here at Secure Freedom Radio. Come again soon, if you would, sir. And in the meantime, be well. Keep up the great work. Next up, Jim Hansen gives us his boots-on-the-ground perspective on what's happening to the defense budget and your security. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces, in the war of ideas. Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
In Washington, Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff, like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Real? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined as we are each week, happily, by Jim Hansen. He is the driving force behind the Mill Bloggers at Black5.net. He is a co-founder of a wonderful organization that he also helps direct communications for called the Warrior Legacy Foundation. And he is, perhaps for our purposes, most importantly, a special operator, now retired from the United States Army's Special Forces, but a man who brings, as a result of all of that, a wonderful boots-on-the-ground perspective to the issues that we touch on here each weeknight. And I'd like to visit with you a little bit, if I can, for starters, Jim, about the latest warnings that we're hearing now from no less an authority than President Obama's own brand spanking new Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta, to the effect that the kinds of cuts that are in the offing will not amount to simply shooting ourselves in the foot, but shooting ourselves in the head. Tell us what to make of this and what your latest thinking is on what's developing in this area.
You know, I got to say that I continue to gain respect for Leon Panetta on an ongoing basis. I was fearful of him in his previous role, that he was simply going to be, you know, a yes man for a lack of activity in our intelligence operations. I was fearful when he came into defense that he was simply being sent there to be a hatchet man you know, and be the guy who justified giant slashes to our defense readiness and capability. And in both situations, he has proved me wrong, and happily so. You know, I think he is in this case, speaks the truth to power. You know, and his boss is definitely a proponent, I believe, of some defense cuts that none of us would be comfortable with. And unless I misunderstand, Panetta's standing up to him and standing up to the Democrats in Congress and all those who seem to see the defense budget as a cash cow to raid so that they can pay for all the other entitlement programs. So good on him. You know, bravo, Mr. Panetta.
Well, it's a little bit, I think, more of a mixed bag than that. I take your point. If he's simply saying, look, we can't do what this super committee is likely to do, either in terms of more cuts or, God forbid, the sequestration train wreck that would flow from their failure to come up with some sort of new cuts program. But I guess, Jim, there's as I understand it, Leon Panetta has saluted smartly and says we'll take the first $400+ billion of cuts. So it's as I say, a little bit more of a mixed bag. But let me just ask you this: you're close to the troops. Your mill bloggers and you personally, your comrades in arms at the moment and so on, I know are wonderful sources of information as well as inspiration for a lot of the writing that you do at black5.net and at bigpiece.com and your commentary here at Secure Freedom Radio, Jim Hansen. But one of the things that seems decidedly in prospect out of all of these cuts, even if it's just the part that Leon Panetta's already agreed to, let alone what would flow if his best advice is not followed on the rest, is a substantial reduction in force of men and women in uniform at the moment. And we're hearing that among the servicemen and women who are coming out of the service, unemployment is far higher than the national average, something on the order of 22%, and that quite a number of them are winding up homeless and on the streets. If we're looking at hundreds of thousands of additional troops being sort of RIFT, as they call it, reduction in force, what might the implications be, not just for those folks, most obviously, but for the morale of those who are still in the service?
Well, I mean, that is a huge concern, Frank. I mean, obviously, you know, we can talk about the defense budget all we want, but in the end, the defense budget is only money to be spent to support our men and women who conduct the wars and who fight the wars for us. You know, so the second we lose sight of the fact that weapon systems and every dollar that we put towards that is designed simply to make sure that the folks we put in harm's way have what they need and themselves are supported, then we've completely, you know, blown the entire concept. So I think the idea that there is going to be a large reduction of force greatly concerns me. I'm not convinced that that is palatable, you know, to the American public. That doesn't mean that Congress and the administration won't get away with doing it. But I don't believe that the current climate would support a large reduction of force as opposed to some cuts to major weapon systems. Now, neither one of those is particularly palatable to anyone who understands our national security. But I think there's a reality to look at, and we need to decide which one we want to fight. Now, as far as the idea of folks currently having difficulties getting jobs, I can't again believe that with all the money going to entitlements and whatnot, that we can't find a way, if we're going to spend money at all, to make sure that those who have served are taken care of when their service is over. And if that, you know, given, and I'm not arguing with those statistics at all, I think they're sadly true. I think what we need to do then is figure out what kind of transition programs are either part of that defense budget or the VA's budget, or I don't care what entitlement budget, and ensure that those folks go to the front of the line. You know, I'm sorry, that is where they belong. They've earned it, and so be it. So I think that's something that we can definitely push and fight for and advocate for.
Well, I hope it won't be just thee and me, my friend. I hope it will be the country as a whole. But one of the guys who is transitioning out of uniform here very shortly, as you know, Jim Hansen of Black5.net, is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen. And in testimony before the Congress last week, as we discussed a bit earlier with our friend John Bolton, Admiral Mullen had some very harsh words for the Pakistanis with respect to the Haqqani network and kind of more generally the role that their government, their intelligence services have been playing as a kind of double game. Not news to you or to our listeners, I think, because we talk about this with regularity. But what do you make of both this revelation by the chairman in this very public way and more generally his tenure as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, with which General David Petraeus, former commander of our forces in Afghanistan and Iraq and now the CIA director, says will mark him as the best and most consequential chairman in our history?
You know, I initially was pretty angry about the fact that while he's walking out the door, he's going to admit the blisteringly obvious point that the Pakistanis are playing both ends against the middle, really. I mean, like you said, we've spent plenty of time discussing that, and it's been common knowledge to anyone paying attention to this. But then I have to look at the political reality of his job, and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs is a political job as much as a military job. You know, he's not an operational commander. He is the administrative commander, you know, administrative leader. So he's bound by the restrictions he has in the political moves and diplomatic moves and military and strategic moves. So even though we all knew it was true, he couldn't stand there and say that because he has to keep that public face up as we pretend the Pakistanis are really our allies. So, yeah, it's a shame that this is the first time he's actually said it, but is it actually good for him as he does that to at least say it out loud? I think there's maybe a net positive. I think it points out that, okay, all the rest of us who've been saying this, it's at least acknowledged and validated by someone in his position. Now, as far as whether he's the greatest chairman of the Joint Chiefs we've ever had, I don't know. That's some pretty exalted company. Now, he had a rough tenure. Obviously, we've been at war, you know, his entire tenure for that, but that's not the first time we've had folks who had to deal with that. So I think he's done a creditable job. I don't have any real beefs with him, and I think he's done some good work standing up, but I don't know, maybe Petraeus and he are going to start a company or something together. Maybe there's some backstory we don't know. I'm not convinced he was the greatest there ever was.
Yeah, well, one of the issues on which we are still awaiting history's judgment, of course, is one that will probably be the decision or the initiative that he is most intimately tied to in the future, and you and I have, I think, begun to agree may well prove to be very problematic, and that, of course, is his strong support for introducing avowed homosexuals into the military, and I think now with the entire agenda that their activists bring with it, it'll be not something that will redound to his credit, or for that matter, to the success of the military. But this is a subject for another day's conversation, and with a little bit more perspective. But in the meantime, we thank you very much, Jim Henson, as always, for your insights on today's events, and hope you'll keep up the good work and keep coming back to us. And the same applies to all of you. I hope you'll do the same tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.